Tomorrow night, Western Michigan University will present a Jazz Masters Series concert at 7:30 in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. And the guest artist is John Patitucci. This is a man who has woven himself into the fabric of jazz for the last several decades, and you might even say into a few unexpected areas, pop music and well beyond, maybe a little funk. I'm really thrilled to have John Patitucci sitting across from me in the studio here at WMUK, and just as happy to have jazz professor, drum player Keith Hall, host of Jazz Currents on WMUK, along for the ride. So I can almost listen to some conversation between the two musicians here today. John, welcome.
Thank you for having me. This is really great. I like being here.
Let me remind listeners again that, John, you will be on stage at the Dalton Center Recital Hall tomorrow with two basses at least, an acoustic and an electric. And we'll hear some of your solo work as well as collaborations with our own Western jazz ensembles.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah. So it's a little difficult to get into your career since, as I said, you've really said yes to a lot of opportunities.
Called naivete. I didn't realize I was going to have to practice that hard if I liked so many different styles of music. I had no idea.
You're playing here at a university, and I know that you teach at the university level, and yet you're a person who left high school to pursue music.
Well, I managed to go, I finished high school, and I went 3 years of college.
Oh, it was college.
But at some point, my classical professor, because I was trained, I do a lot of chamber music too and play classical music as well. But at one point, my bass professor at Long Beach State University in California, we were out there by the time my family moved to California in the 70s. He said to me, I want you to stop playing all that other music you play and knuckle down and take the auditions for the Philharmonic and do all this stuff and do your junior recital and give up all that. He said, when are you going to get tired of playing in those upholstered saloons?
What a great phrase.
And I was very respectful, but in my head, I didn't tell him this. I thought, maybe never. And I left and went on the road at 19 and started playing with different people. And my first road gig was with Chuck Mangione's brother, Gap Mangione, the pianist. And, you know, I went out with some gospel bands too and did things. And I left school and moved up to town. I was living with my parents for we lived in Southern California and by the beach down in Huntington Beach for 4 years, which is a thing, a culture shock, going from Brooklyn to Northern California for high school and all that, and then down there. But the scene was huge in L.A. at the late 70s, and I got into the studios. But I also was mentored by some of the greatest jazz musicians who ever lived. In that period, Victor Feldman, Freddie Hubbard, and then Chick Corea, Herbie Hancock, Joe Farrell, Ayrton Moreira, all these people were living there.
Was the fact that you played both electric and acoustic of value to you, of use?
It was more rare in those days than it is even now.
I see.
Although even now, even if people play both, a lot of times they favor one over the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I always refused to do that, which made my life a lot more difficult. I had to practice a lot more. But I just couldn't see myself getting rid of either one. And even though, like, my teacher was trying to get me to stop playing all these musics that I was so in love with, I wouldn't do it. I left. I didn't know what I was doing, of course, but I made the right decision.
Having those fundamentals, I know that in classical training, you really have to master certain abilities, great tone, great pitch. That can come in handy.
Yeah,
that can come in handy all your life. And I understand that, you know, there's still a bit of classical appreciation for you now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I compose. I have an orchestral premiere coming up in January at the Royal Conservatory of Music in Toronto. So we're going to play a piece that I wrote for orchestra and trio. I do a lot of chamber music. In a couple of months in our town, which is north of New York City, we have an arts council and we do classical things too. I'm going to play the Dvorak String Quintet with some people. I've done a fair amount of Trout Schubert's in my day. And I've gotten a chance, when I moved to New York, I got to play with some of the greatest classical musicians in the world. Some who happened to go to my church. For years, I was going to this particular church where I became one of my best friends in life. Is Larry Dutton, who plays viola in the Emerson Quartet. And I wound up writing, we had all these great musicians, including my wife, who's a great cellist, who went to Eastman. Mm-hmm. So that
you can't escape it.
Yeah, so I mean, that's part of my life. However, a glaring thing about the way academia deals with the European classical tradition is there's a huge hole in the way they don't, I'm going to say the way they don't teach rhythm. Phenomenal, big, glaring omission. And a lot of musicians suffer from that. And in fact, my buddy Larry, who went to Juilliard and did all that, he's a great player. And he plays in a string quartet, so he has to have great rhythm. He often has said, because he's come, we're really good friends, and he's come to see me play with Wayne Shorter and all these people. He said, man, you guys need to go to those conservatories and teach rhythm. Because it doesn't really get talked about. And the thing that because jazz is an African-based music, the sophistication of rhythmic information that came from Africa and that was in the most horrible way because those people were taken against their will and brought all these places. But the way they changed the world in each of those places changed music forever. And even people who were people who you think would be really far away from all that, like classic example, Scarlatti. Scarlatti grew up in Naples, wound up spending time in Spain and Portugal because of being hired as a musician in the courts. He encountered African influence in Portugal because of the slave trade. And his music, Chicoria is a huge fan of Scarlatti, and we've played his music together. His music has a vibe in it that you can tell he was informed by that, even though he was a Baroque composer. He has another kind of thing, influenced by not only the African musicians there, but also because he spent time in Spain and there's the Moors and influence, which happened in Spanish music and their folk music, what later now, you know, we look at as flamenco music or whatever. But there's a lot of rhythmic transference that happened. And so I've spent my life dealing with that as well.
I would like to bring our
yes, our drummer into the conversation.
Keith Hall.
I'm not going to say anything that he hasn't said. We can just listen to John talk.
Rhythm is a very sophisticated subject. And there's always to talk about it and ways people play it. That I think you're right. There's a lot of classically trained musicians who aren't sure what's ahead, what's behind, what's right on the pulse, and as a percussionist, as a drummer, Keith, you can hear it right away.
Yeah, and you know the thing about rhythm is it's the one thing that's really common among all of us. I mean, you might not be able to hear if someone's playing a B flat minor 7 chord, or what melody they're playing, but you can tell if it feels good, you know, and if the rhythm is in the groove, you know, and if the band is connected, that's the foundation of music, I think. I think it's the first
totally.
Thing, the rhythm, and then you build on that.
And I think then comes bass. Right? I mean,
well, it's pretty huge. I mean, Bach was the first walking bassist. You know, his lines influenced Ron Carter and, you know, people before him like Israel Crosby with Ahmad Jamal. Hey. So, you know, the thing about rhythm is, I'll go a step further. There have never been great advancements in harmonic and linear melodic composing that weren't carried by the rhythm. In every music, you could probably say. I will go out on a limb and say in every music. Because what makes, okay, let's go back. Let's go to Bach's music. Musicians for years have said Bach has a kind of swing inside of his music. I'm not a huge proponent of the records where they kind of take his music and put a 4/4 beat on it. I don't really, you know. But because he already has an inherent swing in it. Mozart's music swings. The rhythm that carries those melodies is a thrust. There's something there. Then you have all the guys that were going out in the fields and recording in Eastern Europe folk melodies like Dvorak and also Stravinsky, Prokofiev, all those, you know, Kodály, I think, did it too. So there's that. So the rhythmic information always carries the melodies and the harmonies, always.
Rite of Spring is one of the greatest examples you could come up with.
Yeah. And so the great classical musicians that I've worked with all have great time. The problem happens is in our European system, and I'm my family's fully Italian, so I grew up hearing opera too. So I have my feet in both worlds, and I love both worlds. And it's interesting that in studying bass, all my bass professors were rhythmically invested. So a lot of times the bass sections had better time. And you might not think of it. Some of the other higher strings might think, oh, the bass players, they don't know what they're doing. But oftentimes also in the studios, I've been a studio musician for most of my life in LA and New York. And we do film scores. And I play with some of the greatest players in New York and the Philharmonic and the Met. And the bass sections we have there are unbelievable, and they play time. And some of the other sections sometimes struggle with syncopated rhythms because they don't have any training with African rhythms, most often, you see.
Okay.
So they could play, these people could rattle off a concerto that you wouldn't believe. They're amazing musicians. And I'm not even saying it's their fault. It's they were not exposed to. And I'm not trying to be overly critical. I'm just saying there's something that happens rhythmically that if you study African music and you invest in that, that you're going to be way more able to have what I call internal clock, internal rhythm, where you can stand alone on a stage and play rhythm and you will move people. Mm. Now, the great soloists in classical music can do this.
I want to break in here and say, if you just tuned in and are wondering why we are trying to solve the rhythm problems of the world, it's because one of the foremost bassists working today, John Patitucci, is in the studio along with Keith Hall. And John takes the stage tomorrow night at 7:30 in the Dalton Center Recital Hall as part of the Jazz Master Series. It's a ticketed event, and you can find out details at the School of Music website, on Facebook. Tickets can be ordered ahead of time through the Miller Auditorium box office. And let's put your music where your mouth is and hear a track.
See if this guy has any rhythm after all this talk.
What
does he think he is?
A tune from Soul of the Bass. This is a project where you really said, all my friends, you can stay to the side for the most part. I'll play this album. And we're going to hear The Call.
Yeah, The Call.
Can you introduce the style of the piece?
The Call was originally one of those things. I haven't done this in a while, but one of my earlier records, I did a contrapuntal bass piece where I play all the basses, a lot of different basses, but there are different counterpoint lines happening. But instead of being in a more traditional European classical style, it's over funk music. And the great Nate Smith is the drummer on this recording. He's on two tracks. There aren't many other people except me on this record. It was sort of a bucket list challenge to myself, inspired by Dave Holland's great record, Emerald Tears, in the 70s. And so the only people on this record except me are my wife on cello, my daughters sing on one thing, and Nate Smith.
Let's hear it.
And here he is. Thank you.
from the album Soul of the Bass by John Patitucci, who's my guest here today. We heard The Call. And John, that was a complicated piece with a great, great groove, which, you know, the complicated part wouldn't have come off so well if...
Yeah, boy, Nate has an incredible feel. He you know, for years now, over 20 years, Brian Blade, the great drummer, musician, composer, singer, songwriter, whatever you want to say about him.
Keith Saul, I'm not worthy.
Yeah, he is a deep family member of our family, and we love him so. And, you know, he's played with me a lot. And but everybody in the world is after him, so you can't always get him. So on some of my tours with my electric guitar quartet, I started using Nate as well. And Nate is also a beautiful player and a musician and a drummer. And he has his own, that Kim Folk record and all that stuff. He's really wonderful as well. It's hard for me when I put together my bands because I'm kind of spoiled rotten. I've come up playing with these amazing drum masters. I spent some time with Roy Haynes, who's the history of jazz in one person. I've spent time with Dejanette, and then on the younger crowd, which is now not as young as they used to be, the Vinnie Caliutas and the Dave Weckles, and the, you know, I just played this last week with Andrew Cyril and Tyshawn Sorey in the same band with Joe Lovano. So there's all kinds of different drummers. Nate has an incredible feel for a lot of music, too. Mm-hmm. He's pretty broad in what he can do.
That's important to you.
Yeah, so I wound up getting him to do this because I felt like I wanted to involve him on some of my recordings. He had been faithfully making some tours with me and always amazing, you know. So I used him on this, and he played on two tracks. So, yes, his ability to make it feel incredible, and at the same time, not restrictive. It's a great feel. It's solid as a rock, but it has this breath in it, and that's hard to describe. But that means a lot to me, and that made it possible for us to get that kind of old school funk thing mixed in with these crazy linear ideas.
Yeah,
linear counterpoint and crazy soloing and whatever you want to call it. It was just fun for me to do that.
John Patitucci will be joining members of the Western Michigan University Jazz faculty on stage tomorrow in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. Music begins at 7:30. It's a ticketed event. You can get tickets at the door or through the Miller Auditorium box office now. And maybe, Keith, you could brag on some of your faculty friends right now. The Western Jazz Collective is featuring a lot of great players currently.
Yeah, we have kind of a newly formed faculty group here. It's called the Western Jazz Collective, and we have a couple of brand new members on our faculty. A former student, Matt Landon, is now our guitar professor, and he went on and got his master's degree and started his doctoral degree and then came back when we had this position open. He's a phenomenal player. And I really enjoys teaching, and the guitar students are really taking to him quickly and enjoying that. And then, of course, we have this massive, this just monster on the bass that we have in town now. I just can't believe we have him, John Hebert, from New York. He moved here from New York, and he's on tour right now with Fred Hirsch, who he's been with for years, and he plays with everybody.
He's terrific.
But
did he grow up in New Orleans?
Yes,
from New Orleans. Yeah,
he did indeed.
So he has already made a huge impact on our program, and he's not going to be here tonight or this week, and he doesn't have to be because we have the great John Patitucci. Although John Hebert is really sad he couldn't be here. On top of that, we have Scott Cowan, our trumpet professor, who's a fabulous composer and trumpeter. Andrew Rathbun, our saxophone professor, who's on sabbatical, but he'll be there.
Yeah, he's a firebrand.
Yeah, and Matthew Fries on the piano, another guy that moved here from New York a couple years ago. Greg Jasper is our vocal jazz professor who moved here from L.A. We went to school here together. So there's seven of us now, And it's the collective, we call it the Western Jazz Collective. And we're really excited about this new era in our jazz programs. So just a wonderful new energy, and it's really kind of electric. I mean, the kids see the difference, and they're just excited. So we're excited. And then to cap it off with having the great John Patitucci here, I mean, I've been listening to him for 30 years, I realized.
I better get my cane out.
Yeah, I will. Me too. But there's nobody like John Patitucci. I mean, you can say, oh, who's the greatest acoustic player? Okay, well, who's the greatest electric player? Well, John's both. He's all in one. I can't think of anybody that has mastered the acoustic, the four string, the five string, the six string electric as well as he has, and can play everything, all styles of music. And then you hear his energy. You can just hear his energy on the microphone here. I'm so excited to have the concert tomorrow. And, you know, when we booked him for this, I thought, wow, I'm so excited that my students get to play with John Patitucci. What a thrill for them. And then I thought, wait a second. I get to play with John Patitucci. And then I got real happy.
I think I have to write Keith a check after this whole thing.
Yeah.
Can I ask about the music for tomorrow?
Yeah.
What are you planning on playing?
Well, we're playing some of the tunes that we were talking about earlier. John, you want to?
Yeah. We're going to play a tune called The Watchman. The Watchman is a tribute, is like a my... It's one of the, I think I've written other tunes for Wayne Shorter, but this is one of the most important ones to me. There's a meaning in there. The Watchman, I'm a big studier. I study the Bible a lot in my life. And my brother's a pastor, and you know. And the principle of the Watchman on the walls of the city, who looked out to make sure everything was cool and everybody was secure inside, and he would see if somebody was coming from afar, and you know, somebody who was looking after people. And I take it more of not so much in a military way, uh-huh. but a spiritual way. And I feel like Wayne is the watchman culturally over most of our lives, because he's such a heavy influence over so many of us. But also, he's become like a second father in my life. Mm-hmm. And he's an amazing person. And also, our band, I feel like we, you know, he always calls it going out on the mission, because our mission is to unite people of all cultures and faiths. Because, you know, he's a Buddhist. I'm a Christian.
Wow.
You know, and we love each other, and we really respect each other, and we are, that band has been all around the world. I mean, we did a thing one time in Essaouira at a Ganaouan music festival in Africa, and we got to jam with these Ganaouan folks, and we couldn't even speak the same language, but the guy would look, he'd turn around, he would sing. He was the leader of the band, and there was other guys playing percussion. This was funny, I'll tell you a funny thing. So he would turn around. He had a djembe, which is like a bass kind of, but it's a gourd with two strings. He was the leader, so we were playing with them. So we were like very deferential, and we were supposed to jam with them. We played our own set that night as well. But so he would turn around and play this groove for me. It'd be a bass line. I would cop it. He would go, nod his head. Cool. He'd turn around, start singing this amazing thing. Meanwhile, Brian Blade was there, and Danilo and Wayne, and we're playing. And the guys who were playing the percussion things, they had these metal castanets, I forget what they're called. Mm-hmm. And they have these beautiful multicolored outfits on with the slippers that curl up on the end, and they're like blue and really cool. And they were dancing and playing amazing. And they got so freaked out by Brian. They loved him. These big smiles. We can't even speak the same language, by the way, right? But we're speaking the musical language. They were freaking out looking at him. At one point, the band leader turned and said, "Watch me." You know, they were so in love with what Brian was playing. They weren't paying attention to the leader's cues, right? And so it was a perfect example of what unity is about across cultures. And I'm very invested in this. In this time where the country's so polarized about these things, I'm very invested in the unity and spiritual faith should be a unifying principle, not a division. Mm. And so many people get it wrong. And they don't realize that love and sacrifice are at the root of all spiritual disciplines. So there's not a lot of room for the kind of animosity and hatred that we see in the world right now.
In what you just described, you know, in all human experience, does it get much more exalted than just communicating through music like that?
It's amazing. And, you know, one time there was there's a great gospel singer in Philadelphia named Ruth Naomi Floyd. She's an African-American woman born of a Baptist minister who was also, he was a Baptist minister and a police officer, something, a wild combination. And he raised them in the church and everything. And one time she was talking to an older lady in the church. She said, you know, I really want to make more of an impact, you know, to unite, you know, because there's also all these racial divisions and things that shouldn't be. And the lady said, but you're playing jazz, right? And she said, every time you step on the stage, honey, you are making a civil rights moment, because the band with Ruth also, it's always blended. And in many of the situations that I've grown up in, I'm the only person who's not of color. Because we Italians, we like to think we're something else anyway. We're, you know, we're olive.
Interesting category.
But the truth of it is, I've been grafted into a culture that I've been in for many decades, most of my life now. And I feel like I've been given the blessing and a gift of being mentored by so many of these African-American masters. They changed my life. They took me in. They didn't have to. They had plenty of bass players already. They didn't need this little kid from Brooklyn. But they took me in, and they taught me, and they loved me. And so I feel like it's part of my my calling to be part of this music. It found me when I was very young.
I'd like to point out that John Patitucci's piece honoring Wayne Shorter, The Watchman, is on the program tomorrow, and it hasn't been heard on
album. It's not recorded,
This is your only chance, folks, to hear the piece come to life in the concert starting at 7:30 in the Dalton Center tomorrow. And there's an album called Remembrance in which you find people to commemorate.
Yes.
On this album. I wonder if we could hear an example from that. Maybe Sunnyside?
Yeah, we're doing Sunnyside. This is my tribute to Sonny Rollins. The great Joe Lovano and Brian Blade are on this record. It's a trio record. We did it in the same room with no headphones, old school, at Avatar Studios in New York City. It was a very important record in my life, having these guys and paying honor to so many different people. The title track was about Michael Brecker after he passed, but there's tributes to to Sonny Rollins. There's a tribute to Joe Henderson. There are many different tributes on the record. So this one is called Sunnyside.
That's an original piece by John Patitucci. We heard John Patitucci on acoustic bass, Joe Lovano on tenor, and the song is called Sunnyside, remembering Sonny Rollins.
Yes, and the master Brian Blade on drums, too. Woo!
And that album is called Remembrance. We've had a look at just two of John Patitucci's records, Soul of the Bass, which is really bass-focused, and Remembrance, which brings together friends to play a lot of tunes that bring back the souls of great players and great friends of John. And if you're just tuning in, I need to mention that this is we're previewing a Jazz Masters series concert, which is tomorrow at 7:30. John Patitucci will take the stage with Western student ensembles as well as the Western Jazz Collective. Keith is here at Keith Hall, of course, here chaperoning John Patitucci. I have picked out a final song. I'm just dying to hear off of the John Patitucci Electric Guitar Quartet, Brooklyn, something totally different for the end of the hour. And since you mentioned the vital importance of learning your African music, your African rhythms, there's track two, Duga.
Kamalemba.
I can't wait to hear it. But let's do a little bit of wrapping up. Will you be working with students today and tomorrow?
Yeah.
And
then? Yeah. I'm doing a bass class this morning, and then I'll be coaching ensembles in the afternoon. And I love doing that. I brought some materials with me and stuff like that. And I just love, you know, I've been teaching now on the college scene for 20 years or something like that. Before that, I didn't have a formal college teaching gig. I was doing master classes all over the world for years. I also started a bass school in 96 when I came back to New York called the Bass Collective for a while, and then I left. But I've been involved in teaching since I was in high school, electric bass. My mother used to kind of scratch her head because my brother was a phenomenal teacher, is a phenomenal teacher. He got a degree in classical guitar in college, and he studied with a man named Jim Bertram, who is no longer with us, but who studied with Segovia. My brother was a rhythm guitar player, a blues guy, a jazz guy. So he would teach me all the stuff he was learning and teach me the shortcuts to everything. And I was learning how to formulate like a concept on the electric bass as a teenager. This was before I even started playing acoustic. And so sometimes a doorbell would ring and there'd be like a 24-year-old guy coming for a lesson. And I was teaching, which is weird to me now. But it's really all because of my brother. My brother had such a organizational sense and is a really gifted teacher. He's still teaching guitar.
Knows how to break it down.
Unbelievable, yeah. Man. He really is special. So
you take some of those early acquired skills in teaching to colleges now.
I mean, my brother did a lot of things for me that I we don't have time to talk about everything, but but he really shaped my
approach,
my life.
Keith, what else is on the agenda for the next couple days?
He's got John's got a bass class today, some combos this afternoon, master class tomorrow, more rehearsals, and getting ready for the concert.
Could the public drop in on the master class by any chance?
Yeah, I don't see why not. That's this afternoon at
the coaching, the ensemble.
2 o'clock, from 2 to 4, and that'll be in the Dalton Center.
In the recital hall?
In room A.
Okay, room A, just down the hall.
Yeah. And what else do we have? I guess that's about it.
Obviously, I'm excited because tomorrow's the rehearsal day. We'll rehearse with the big band, with the kids.
Right.
And with the faculty group.
Yes.
Which is going to be a blast, you know. So
Keith,
all of it's going to be fun.
How do you prepare students to be ready to learn and maybe get over their maybe intimidation with a person you've been building up for months, you know, and having them listen to John's playing, and then they're going to meet him and have to perform right away.
I don't think there's any way to prepare for John Patitucci.
No.
No, you know, we really try to prep the kids and say, listen, you know, most of the kids are familiar with him on some level, but say, really do your homework and just dig into what you can. Go listen to his recordings, learn about him so that when he's here, that you can make the most of this opportunity to interact with him, have questions. And because this could change somebody's life. I remember having guests come in as a student, you know, in the same place here where, I've made lifelong friends, and then I would move to New York, and then I'd end up working with those people. So they were really important connections. They can be life-changing events. So we just try to let the kids know about that up front so that they don't miss it, you know?
Yeah,
so.
And I think it's all incumbent upon me to make them feel comfortable, frankly. And I remember when I was 15, Rufus Reed, the great bassist, who's been a lifelong friend as well. I just saw him the other night. He came and did a thing at my high school. And then I had him at one of those Jamie Ebersol clinics as my teacher. And that was profound, the effect of that. And so I also had another very important mentor, this guy, Chris Paler. It's spelled Polar, in the Bay Area, who played with a lot of people and wrote a lot of stuff. And he sort of adopted me as a student when I was 13. And changed my life, introduced me to all the records and all the stuff. It was amazing. So I feel like I've had some incredible blessings with mentorship. So that's another thing that fuels the way that I approach young players, is I want to make it enjoyable and fun for them. And also, you know, there's that, my brother calls it, with his pastor viewpoint, invitation and challenge. In relationships, you want to invite them and make, you know, help people to feel safe and that they are, and you know, actually, you know, they're cared for and you know, served, and you want to challenge them to be the best version of who they are. So
yeah, we might have to leave it right there in order to hear this African influence piece from. The album Brooklyn, and I'd just love to keep going, but I think that's
I know
it.
Time is.
We'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m.
Oh, marches on.
Okay. Yeah, let's say again. Yeah. The show's at 7:30 p.m. tomorrow at the Dalton Center Recital Hall, and you know there's a lot of magic being created in the next 48 hours, yeah. 24 hours, and the chemistry's building. Yeah, it is magic, especially with jazz. You end up have the better you listen, the more you communicate, the better it will be. So who knows what will happen tomorrow?
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Keith.
Thank you.
Say the name of this tune.
This is called Dugu Kamalemba. It was written by Umu Sangari, the great singer from Mali, and I fell in love with the tune, and then I researched what it was about. And it was profound. It's actually a very moral lesson to the young women in the village to watch out for the womanizer.
Okay.
Yes.
John Patitucci, tomorrow, 7:30, details at milleroditorium.com or the School of Music website.